This message, titled The Lowly Brother from James chapter 1 verse 9, was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com.
Brothers and sisters, I want to remind you this morning, as we return to this letter of James, that as James opens this letter, he really begins to deal with the two biggest challenges that are faced by Christians almost every day of our lives. On the one hand, we have the challenge of trials. And on the other hand, we have the challenge of temptations. One of these is intended to test our faith, and the other challenge is often intended in diabolical ways to take our faith from us. And James is writing with a pastoral heart to carefully navigate us in this first chapter through those two challenges: the challenge of trials to our faith and the challenge of temptation. And while those two, and we will see this more if the Lord is willing in weeks to come when we begin to deal with temptation, but while those two differ in some ways, they are both, if we can put it this way this morning, unpleasant realities in our lives. Because both trial and temptation makes the Christian life at many times extremely challenging and difficult. You know, there are people who think that it shouldn't be that way. There are many people, I believe, who are hoodwinked into thinking that life should be easy, that life should be painless, that life should come naturally without its challenges, and especially the Christian life, perhaps, should be smooth sailing. But that is a deceit, brothers and sisters, that threatens the spiritual well-being of many people today. And we need to remember, as men and women who are seeking to be Christians in this world, we need to remember the cross always comes before the crown. The cross always comes before the crown. Now, we don't often want the crosses of life. We don't like them. They're heavy. They often hurt and they're hard to carry. And James recognizes that. He knows that the various trials that we face that come and test our faith, test our trust and our confidence and our assurance in God's character and in his promises, that these trials aren't easy. And naturally, the innate desire of our hearts is to have the trials removed, to just have them taken away. God, won't you take the trial away? But James knows, and we need to know, brothers and sisters, that God seldom does that. Why does God seldom take trials from our lives? Well, if I can speak after the manner of men, it's for this reason. Because, brothers and sisters, God is oftentimes more of a giver than he is a taker. God doesn't always take the darkness, but he gives light. God doesn't always take the hurt, but he gives healing. God doesn't always take the brokenness, but he gives the binding together. God doesn't always take the thorns, but he gives grace upon grace. And in many ways, that's James's point. There's these various trials that we're going to meet with in this life that test our faith. They're going to put our faith to the test, our trust and our confidence in God. And James says, here's the way you need to think about all these various trials. You need to consider them to be a source of joy in your life. And how do we come to consider these things as a source of joy? It's not by getting past the trials. It's not by getting out of the trials that we meet with in this life. But the way in which we learn to see these things and to count them as all joy is not by getting out, but by God giving us wisdom in the midst of the trial. And how do we get this wisdom? Well, as we've been seeing in weeks past, and I just want to remind you, James tells us, here's how you get the wisdom you need. First, you ask. It's as simple as that. You ask God for it. In verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God. And as James writes that, he is certain, and brothers and sisters, we need his certainty to be our expectation that as we ask God for wisdom in the midst of our trials, he's going to give it because he's the generous giving God. That's what God does. And so James says, if you need this wisdom in order to count your trials as all joy, first and foremost, you must ask God for it. But secondly, and we began seeing this a number of weeks ago, secondly, James also tells us that after we ask God for it, then we also need to apply what God gives. That's the point. If you remember, verses 9 through 11, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation, the rich in his humiliation. The picture that James is giving us, he is saying, if you lack wisdom, ask God for it. He's going to give it. And when God gives you that wisdom, as he undoubtedly will do, learn to apply it to your life. Learn to apply the wisdom he undoubtedly gives to the trials that are set before you. And James illustrates that by showing us the way in which wisdom is applied. First, in the life of the lowly. In verse 9, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. And then he shows us how that wisdom is applied even in the trials of being rich. Let the rich boast in his humiliation. James is saying, here's the thing we need to remember. We need to ask God for it, and then we need to apply it to our lives. We ought always to remember that, brothers and sisters. I've often wondered if we could see the resources in a very tangible, visible way, all the resources that God gives to us for our daily lives, all of his graces, and if we could see in a tangible way the riches of his mercies, I've sometimes wondered how much of those riches remain unused in each of our lives. And James is saying, you've got to use, you've got to apply what God gives when you ask. That's what you need to do. And he illustrates that, as I've said, in these two circumstances, the lowly brother and the rich brother. And this morning, what captures our attention is the first of these, simply verse 9. Let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. And I want to consider this under two simple points this morning. First, I want to preach a humble condition, a humble condition. And then the second point this morning will be the high position. A humble condition and the high position. And so the first thing that I would have you notice this morning from verse 9 is this humble condition. So James says in verse 9, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. It's important for us, if we're going to understand what James is saying here, it's important that we understand what James means with this word lowly. Now, given what James immediately says in verse 10, I imagine most of us are quick to connect the dots. Let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation and the rich in his humiliation. So that we probably, as we read that, our immediate reaction is, well, who is the lowly brother? Well, James is contrasting the lowly brother to the rich brother. And so what James must mean here by lowly are those who, economically speaking, are poor. That must be what James is referencing here. And it might make some good sense to think in those terms. In fact, as we continue through this letter, we are going to see that James has a huge concern for people who are economically poor. In chapter 2, James lambasts those he writes to for the sin of partiality, the way in which they give preference to those who are rich, all the while they despise those who are economically poor. In chapter 5, James will spare no language against what you might call wealthy employers who refuse to pay workers a living wage. And James tells them in no uncertain terms the wickedness of the rich treating and oppressing the economically poor in that way. We're not going to get into that this morning because we're not there yet. But it might be easy to think then, as we come to this ninth verse, that when James calls a brother lowly, he must only be speaking in economic terms. But I want you to know this morning that while verse 10, and the rich, it is taken as a fairly narrow designation to those who are economically well off, when James says, "Let the lowly brother," in verse 9, the idea of lowliness is not very narrow. It's not very restricted. It's actually a word with very wide, broad, and deep meaning. The word that James uses here, the lowly brother, is a word that means a brother who is in humble circumstances. The one who is, if you want to think in these terms, of lowly rank. One who is in the condition of dependence. One who, by the standards of this world, is insignificant for all intents and purposes. The lowliness which James is addressing here in the ninth verse is lowliness of any kind. It is lowliness of position. It is lowliness of privilege. It is lowliness of stature. And James is saying, in a very real sense, this is where many, even many Christians, find themselves. Not only in the writing of this letter, but still today, this is a place, a humble condition that many Christians are in. And it has wide meaning. The humble condition here can refer to material poverty, to lacking physical resources in this life. In fact, in James's day, and it's very hard for us in our 21st century Western context to really connect with this, but in James's day, poverty was a true, real issue. Not the kind of poverty that says, well, I don't know if I have enough to buy a new iPhone, but true poverty. And society was very divided between those who were very rich and those who were very poor. And there wasn't much room in all of that for what we call the middle class. And James understands, as do the scriptures, that this is a humble condition people find themselves in. In Matthew chapter 26, verse 11, Jesus tells the people, if you remember, he makes that statement, that the poor you will always have with you. Jesus understood that poverty is a reality in this fallen world. There's no way to eradicate it. There's no way to weed it out of a society. There's no way to overcome it and get rid of it, no matter what laws you pass, no matter how you budget. Jesus says the poor you will always have with you. And of course, he's not saying that as some kind of fatalism. He's actually using that as a motive. This is why we need to be quick to do good. This is why we need to be quick to be merciful. This is why we ought to be quick as the church to supply for the needs of other people. But Jesus understands, James understands, in this world there are people called upon to live in this humble condition, to be materially lowly, to be those who don't have much by way of possession. But the lowliness which James is writing of here is not just this economic idea and the lacking of material possessions. It is also, if I can put it this way this morning, we can also understand this in some degree as what we might call spiritual lowliness. And what do I mean by that? Well, maybe one of the best ways to understand that is to recall for a moment in Matthew 25, Jesus' parable of the talents. If you remember, Jesus speaks of the kingdom of heaven there in Matthew 25. And he says, well, the kingdom of heaven is like this. A master is going away. And what does he do? Well, he entrusts to his servants different amounts of talents, different amounts of money. He gives to one 5 talents while he gives to another a single talent. And Jesus is telling us in that depiction of the kingdom of heaven that not all of us are equipped with the same spiritual resources. There really are people in the kingdom of heaven who by the command of Christ and the equipping of the Spirit are given more spiritual gifts in one sense, and there are those who are given less. The Apostle Paul draws upon this in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. As he speaks about the way in which the church is like a body. And he says, each of us are part of this body. We are all members of the one body, but we also know that all the parts of the body, they have a different place. They have a different function. And the language that Paul actually uses in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, the language that Paul uses is that there are those, you know, you might be an eye, you might be a foot. There are those who are weaker. There are those who are stronger. There are those who serve in honorable places. And Paul actually says there are those who serve in less honorable places. As the Spirit equips and as the Spirit gives, there are those who abound in spiritual graces. And there are those who, for all intents and purposes, might be spiritually somewhat impoverished in the body of Jesus Christ. As Jesus says in Matthew 25, it is given each according to their ability. But the lowliness that James is speaking of here, not only material and spiritually, we can also think of it this morning in terms of social rank, social status. You know, if you're familiar with the Bible, you know, if you're familiar with the New Testament, that there's a difference in social status in the day and age in which the apostles wrote. The apostle Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2, speaks of those in society who hold high positions. In 1 Corinthians 1, the apostle Paul says, you know what, not many of you were noble in your birth. You didn't belong to that social rank. You didn't belong to that social status. If you're familiar with the world that surrounds the New Testament, you know that there were masters and there were bond servants. There was a societal structure. There were people who held particular positions, some high positions, and some very lowly positions. And our world has not advanced too far beyond a picture of that. If you pick up sociologists, you'll find that they are very quick to point out that even in rural communities, there's social stratification. There's social status to be had, even in small communities like our own. There are those who are on top of the totem pole, and there are those who are on the bottom of social rank and social status. And James is recognizing that. Not only is there this material poverty, this spiritual lowliness, maybe social status and rank, but I think included in this word that James is writing, if I can put it this way this morning, those who are circumstantially lowly. Those who through the providence of God and the lot of his will and wisdom in their lives bear much in this world. Sickness, disease, depression, hurt, pain, crosses and losses. It's including those who by the appointment of God suffer significantly in this life. You think of Job. If you remember when we were there, what does Job do? He sits in the dust and he covers himself with ashes. Why? It's an outward expression of how lowly he had become in his suffering. How he was to be regarded as the dust and the ash of the ground. We can include in here those who suffer for the sake, especially for the sake of Jesus Christ. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, do you remember the language that he uses? The Apostle Paul says that on account of Christ, we are regarded as the scum of the earth. Paul says this is the reality of being a Christian in an unbelieving world. We are the refuse of this world. The world regards us as nothing more and nothing less than a heap of trash. So that in one sense, every Christian finds themselves in that kind of a lowly category simply because of who we are in Jesus Christ. You see, brothers and sisters, what I want you to understand this morning, the point is this, that James is saying there are those who live in this kind of humble condition. Whether it is material poverty, whether it is the sense of spiritual lowliness, whether it's social status and rank in this world, whether it's circumstantial and providential, there are those who live in a humble condition. And brothers and sisters, here's the truth that James is pointing us to. Those who live in this kind of humble condition have trials all their own. There are trials of faith that accompany poverty. There are trials of faith that accompany spiritual lowliness. There are trials of faith that accompany being on the bottom of the social status totem pole. There are trials of faith that accompany circumstantial and providential lowliness in this life. And James is saying that's where some of you find yourselves. You find yourselves in this humble condition. You find yourself as one who is not high and prosperous and wealthy and rich, but you find yourself to be the lowly brother. And James is saying, here's what we need to understand. James is saying in that, you've got to find a reason for joy. Whatever your trials are in the lowliness of your condition, you've got to find joy. And how do you do that? James is saying, whatever the trial is that accompanies you, lowly brother, joy is to be found when you ask God for wisdom, and then you take the wisdom he gives and you apply it to your life. Not outside of your lowly condition, but inside your lowly condition. Each of these comes with trials, and James is saying you've got to find joy, you've got to apply the wisdom of God. So how does James then do that? James doesn't just say, do it, good luck, pat us on the back, and send us on our way. But James very simply shows us, and I want you to notice the second thing this morning. The second thing is the high position. James says, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. Now, if we just stop there, full stop, there's something that James says there that ought to really, it ought to stop us in our tracks. What on earth is James saying? A lowly brother boasting in his exaltation? How is being a lowly person put you in this position of exaltation? What on earth is James talking about? Because in a human way, brothers and sisters, what James writes here makes absolutely no sense to us. And it doesn't make sense to us because we are so quick to measure things by our own understanding. You know, if you were to go around and you were to ask the young kids in church today, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, they give quite wonderful answers to that question, don't they? But oftentimes, the childhood imagination is captured with, I want to grow up and do something wonderful, to gain riches and fame and fortune. No little kid tells you, I want to grow up to be a lowly person in this world. I want to grow up to be on the bottom of the social totem pole. I want to grow up and not know for sure how to pay my bills. I want to grow up and I want to be circumstantially lowly. Nobody says that. Adults don't say that. And we don't say that because, brothers and sisters, in one sense, we are so quick to measure things by our own understanding. We are so quick to measure our value. We are so quick to measure success. We are so quick to measure worth by the things of this world, primarily by prosperity, measured economically or socially. So that when we read James here, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation, the innate voice within us is probably saying, James, you're crazy. Lowly people have no reason to exult. Lowly people have no reason to rejoice. Lowly people have no reason to boast. They don't have anything. So what are they going to boast in? What are they going to rejoice in? And James is saying, oh, friends. He's saying, friends, you need to learn to stop thinking economically. You need to stop thinking socially, and you need to start thinking biblically. And James says the lowly brother is to boast in his exaltation. Or I like the way one translation puts it, the lowly brother is to take pride in his high position. And what James is saying, plain and simple, to us this morning is this. Brothers and sisters, the lowliest Christian in this world has infinitely more reason to rejoice than the wealthiest and most prosperous unbeliever. The lowliest Christian in this world has infinitely more reasons to boast than the richest of this world. And why is that? Well, there's any number of ways we can think about that. But the lowly brother is to boast in his high position. It's a high position because of his identity. Now, this is really key to understanding James here. Remember, we landed here for a little while last time we were here. But James doesn't just simply say, let the lowly boast in his exaltation. James says, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. James is not here somehow commending to us a lowly life in and of itself, as if there's some kind of merit and virtue and glory in being a lowly person. James wants us to understand that it is the lowly person who is identified with Jesus Christ. It is the lowly person, whatever their circumstances, whatever their humble condition, it is the brother, it is the Christian who has every reason to boast and to exalt in their high position. That's James's point. However lowly you are, if you are a Christian, then boast in your high position, boast in your exaltation. Why? Because of the identity that you share with Jesus Christ. Because you believe in him and you have faith. I was Friday morning, I was over at the diner with a couple of men. We were doing a Bible study. And we were reading through 1 Peter chapter 1, and I was struck again at the way in which Peter words it. You remember in 1 Peter chapter 1, Peter says, our faith is more precious than gold. To have faith is more than having all the riches of this world. The author of Hebrews, if you remember, in Hebrews chapter 11, he commends Moses. Why? Because Moses refused the riches of Egypt to be identified with the people of God. Moses knew to be in identity with God himself, to be in identity with Jesus, was of greater value than all the riches that the rich kingdom of Egypt could possibly offer. And James is saying, therefore, you lowly brothers, boast in your high position as one who is identified through faith alone with Jesus Christ. You remember the way that Jesus tells his disciples this? In Luke chapter 10, his disciples come back to him. And they're all excited. Why? Because Jesus had given them power here on earth and they were casting out demons. And you remember what Jesus says? He says, don't rejoice because spirits are subject to you. But Jesus looks at his disciples in Luke chapter 10, verse 20. And he says, rejoice. Because your names are written in heaven. I don't know how to contend with our culture of identity. To say strongly enough this morning, brothers and sisters, that to be identified with Jesus Christ is the greatest possible treasure to have in this world. And James says, let the lowly brother boast then in his high position. But not merely this idea of identity. Why is the lowly brother to boast in his high position? Can I put it this way this morning? It's because of the way in which God often uses the lowly. It's the way in which God often uses the lowly. Maybe you remember in Luke chapter 1. As the angel comes and gives his tidings to Mary, to tell Mary that she will bear within her own womb the Son of God. Now, oftentimes, as Protestants, we really forget what a blessing that was for Mary. But you remember in Luke chapter 1, verse 48, Mary says this, my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. For he has looked on the humble estate of his servant. For behold, from now on, all generations will call me blessed. Mary's recognizing in this incredible way that lowly and the humble condition she finds herself in, God had chosen to use her to be the one who would bear the Lord Jesus Christ. And it is just a small picture, brothers and sisters, of the way in which God normally works. God normally, he ordinarily uses those who are lowly in this life. That's what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 28. God chose what is low and despised in this world. And as Paul writes that, he has in mind the very Christians who are there in Corinth. And he says, look, when God called you, most of you were not wise according to worldly standards. Most of you were not powerful according to worldly standards. Most of you were not noble by your birth, but God chooses to use that which is lowly and despised in this world to shame the wise. This is why, brothers and sisters, if you read church history, Christianity usually flourishes most among the disadvantaged. It is not prosperous societies that are overflowing with an abundance of wealth where Christianity ordinarily does best. But within the history of the church, it is among the poor and the despised and the lowly. And the destitute, and the lonely, and the diseased, and the afflicted, and the suffering, where God's grace ordinarily accomplishes incredible things. Not exclusively, but ordinarily, God uses those who are lowly in this life. I've often wondered, and this is a bit of a tangential point, maybe that's why the church in America is languishing. Because we have more prosperity in our day and age than we know what to do with. And rarely do a prosperous people understand the desperate need they have for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And James says, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. Not only identity and use, but let's end on this point. The lowly brother is also one who understands. To boast in the understanding that he has of who God is. We read it this morning from Jeremiah chapter 9. Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 24. God says, don't let the wise boast in their wisdom. Don't let the mighty boast in their might. Don't let the rich boast in their riches. But God says, Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 24, but let him who boasts boast in this, that he understands and knows me. That I am the Lord. I am the Lord of steadfast love, justice, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, declares the Lord. What does the Lord delight in? He delights in the one who understands him. There's a thought to take home today. God doesn't delight in your bank account. God doesn't delight in your book knowledge and the degrees that hang on your wall. God doesn't delight in all your physical, earthly strength. What does God delight in? He delights in the one who knows and understands him. Paul expresses the same thought in Philippians chapter 3, verse 8. Where Paul says, I consider all things as a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus. The way most of our translations translate that, it's fairly tame. But the word that Paul uses for loss is the word for rubbish. It's actually the word for dung and for excrement. And Paul is saying, I regard everything as a piling heap of dung compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus. And James says, let the lowly brother then boast in that he understands God. Brothers and sisters, James's point is simply this. The lowliest Christian has more reason to rejoice than the wealthiest unbeliever in all this world. But I am sometimes not convinced that we are actually convinced of that. But James says, here's what the lowly brother, with all his trials in all his lowliness, is to do. He is to still find reason to rejoice. It's the only way. And so James is telling us here, you who find yourselves in a humble condition by the measurement of this world, still you are given this high position. The high position of identity with Christ, of often being the ones who are most used in the kingdom of Jesus, as those who know and understand God as he has revealed himself in Jesus Christ. And James is saying, don't you know? If that's true of you, there is no depth to which you can sink in this life, in poverty, in losses, in crosses, in suffering, in persecution. There is no depth to which you can go in this life that does not still grant you a place of exaltation. Let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. Let's pray.